Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing programs to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
Dr. Michael Creighton is Chair of Accounting for Houston Baptist University and a Professor of Accounting. Dr. Creighton focuses upon global business, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and corporate social responsibility. He teaches courses including financial accounting, management accounting, international accounting, and leadership. He's eager to grow HBU's accounting program and to connect with business leaders in the area. And of course, you can learn so much more at hbu.edu/business. Welcome, Dr. Creighton.
Thank you so much.
And so you're new to HBU.
1 year. Just finished my first year here.
And I could tell immediately you had to be from New England. So you're born and raised where?
I was actually born and raised in Brooklyn in New York City, but I moved up to Connecticut 20, 30 years ago. And I believe some of that New England accent crept into my New York accent.
Yeah.
I look forward to hearing what I will sound like once a little bit of a Texan drawl creeps in there as well.
So what drew you to HBU?
I've always done a lot of work in the energy industry.
Yes.
And so I've been somewhat familiar with the region. I was particularly attracted, however, to HBU's growth. The institution is growing rapidly, developing new programs, improving and increasing its capacity to train the traditional incoming college student, as well as professionals who want a particular technical expertise to help them with their career development. Of course, the entire move, the dramatic move into the online realm, I thought was particularly exciting. And when I had the opportunity to help the organization grow and help as many people as it can, I could not resist grabbing it and moving down here.
Oh, that's great. Well, we're really glad to have you. And you're married and your wife, and you have adjusted well to the kind demeanor and hospitality of Houstonians.
It is most certainly not the same type of hospitality that you see up in the Northeast.
No.
It's a delightful change of pace, and it took me a little while to get used to it. But when you move to something better, you tend to adjust very quickly.
Yeah. You know, we are more ethnically diverse as a city in Houston than even New York City. We eclipse New York City. And what I love about Houston is with the ethnic diversity, there is, by and large, a very harmonious society, you know? And that it's such a contrast, and this was, of course, extremely illustrated in Hurricane Harvey. I mean, everybody was colorblind, everybody helped everybody, but it, in large sense, is very characteristic of Houston. It's just a very special place.
And I believe every classroom, every course, whether the room is in person, on campus, or online, is a microcosm of that kind of community. We have incredible diversity in each and every class, and that helps us take major problems that we're facing as a society and as businesses within the society, such as the problem of dealing with hurricane damage, the threat of climate change or other demographic changes that are happening to the community. And we do everything that we can to bring those questions into the curriculum and to utilize the amazing diversity of our students to enrich the conversation.
You know, I can't imagine how important a business degree is, particularly now. It's such a competitive world. You've got an obviously, but I was interested in your focus, global business, entrepreneurship, sustainability, corporate responsibility. I mean, it's quite a unique breadth there.
Yeah, there are many traditional areas of business that one can go into, but there are newly emerging areas of business as well. It's the newly emerging areas of business that I find more complicated, more challenging, and perhaps ultimately more worthwhile. I would also say that many of the traditional tools and techniques of accounting can be applied to these new questions and new challenges of business, while the traditional areas of accounting, the bookkeeping, the tax return preparation, is increasingly moving from the accountant's hand over to a computer program.
Mm-hmm.
This causes problems for people who want to build their careers in a rapidly emerging economy where traditional methods of accounting and other business activities are becoming automated. And what we try to do here is to capture the essence of those traditional practices, to teach students what they are all about so that they can become well-versed in them, but to make sure that we build upon that by immersing students as well in the newly emerging business practices that will form the basis of their jobs going forward over the decades to come.
Now, Houston Baptist University's Business College is a very, very distinguished school. I mean, it's named after Archie Dunham, who is a perennial businessman, the former chairman of Chesapeake Oil. He has an illustrious career. What a thrill to have his backing, not just his name, but really his backing on this business school. Why should a student consider coming to the business school at HBU?
There are other options that a student can consider attending if one wants an advanced education in other institutions. A student might find oneself sitting in auditoriums with dozens or even hundreds of other students listening to faculty members lecture. There's nothing wrong with that. That's one style of education, but we have a different style of education. I know each and every one of my students as a teacher. Also, as the chair of a department, I know each and every student who is in the department. I'll give you an example. Right now, as we speak, there are over two dozen high school graduates who are about to join us as incoming freshmen. They haven't even arrived yet. They'll be getting here in a couple of weeks. But I already know their names. I already know their backgrounds. And in the next few weeks, I will get to know them personally. Very few other schools can say that. Sometimes sheer size is an advantage, but sometimes it can be a bit dehumanizing. And we have the size, the scope, and the personal focus to make our smallness, if you will, into nimbleness, into a personal style of education. And in my opinion, that is a tremendous advantage.
Well, it's hard to fall through the cracks when you know the name. And as we both know, there's a mentorship that takes place in the education process. And that mentorship is increased when you actually have time to know that's Joey and that's Bill and that's Stacy and that's Missy over there and know a little bit about their background, right?
Correct. There's two things that go into a mentorship approach. There's the personal touch of getting to know someone, of understanding that when you ask a person, how are you? How is that class going? You've had this weakness in a particular area. Have you been working on it? You not only need to listen to the response from the student, but you need to be able to listen for tone of voice, for body language, to be able to truly understand whether the student is experiencing a problem, even if the student doesn't want to admit it. There is a second approach, however, and that's the data-driven approach. One thing that I do in each of my classes is to give a very brief quiz at the beginning of every class session. The purpose of the quiz is simply to test one's knowledge of what we have just reviewed as a class the preceding session. In addition to keeping the students on their toes and ready to play, if you will, in every new class session, every single quiz gives me more data because I don't only look at how students have done on that quiz. I look at how they do on different types of questions. Some are very essay question oriented. Some are much more quantitative multiple choice oriented. That information, combined with my ability to reach each student on a very personal level, helps me to tailor my advice for each student that I am trying to help. And it also assists me in trying to figure out how the student can be encouraged to pursue certain career options that are best mm-hmm. for him or her.
Big point there, because in obtaining the degree or the postgraduate degree, the focus and selection of vocation and the earlier that focus develops, the better.
Dwight Eisenhower, the great military general in World War II and later president of the United States, was credited with a comment about planning. While he was the supreme Allied commander in World War II in Europe, he had a huge planning staff. And when people would ask him, is it worthwhile to plan? His response would be something to the effect of, every plan becomes obsolete the moment it hits the table, the moment it is completed. But the planning process is what is most valuable. And I believe what he meant was, simply by going through a continuous planning process, you are looking at your results, you are thinking about what you accomplished and what you failed to do, and then you are looking at what the future is about to bring you, and you adjust accordingly. And getting into the habit of doing that, looking at data, and then changing your actions as a result of it, and then continually modifying what you do to succeed, is part of a planning process. And it is how one becomes successful, even if every specific plan, as Eisenhower said, becomes obsolete the moment it is completed.
So true. I mean, what was it that drew you to HBU? I know a man of your caliber could go a lot of places, but you chose specifically, particularly the geographic distance, you chose, I know you and your wife, this was a very thoughtful, careful decision. Why HBU?
So let me walk you through a brief accounting example. Okay. I will anoint you as an accountant at the end of this. Let's say I have $5 in my pocket and I own nothing else, even my clothes are borrowed. And let's say I owe you $2. And let's say I'm good for it. You know I will pay you. Well, if I own $5, it's in my pocket. And if I owe you $2, how much would you say I'm worth?
Three,
that's exactly right. 5 minus 2 is 3. What you own minus what you owe is what you are worth. It is your value, and that is the essence of accounting. But now let's make it a little bit more interesting. Let's say I pay you the $2 that I owe you. I now only have $3 left in my pocket. I don't owe anybody anything. What am I worth? I have $3. I owe you nothing. What am I worth?
I would say $3.
There you go. And if you think about it, if I am worth $3 before I pay you what I owe you, and if I am still worth $3 after I pay you what I owe you, my value has not changed for making the payment. And if you think about that, then you would have to wonder, if I don't become more valuable according to accounting principles after I make a payment, why would I pay you anything? Why would any organization pay anybody anything?
Sure.
Now, the answer to that conundrum lies in the value of what is an asset. Because even though I might own nothing fungible or measurable other than the $5 in my pocket, I actually still own one other purely intangible asset, and that is my reputation. And as a result, every time I pay someone what I owe that person, my reputation for making timely payments improves. Some people say, but that's not measurable at all. But it is. That's what credit scores and credit ratings are all about.
Sure.
Some people might say, but it's very difficult to take a credit score and turn it into a measure of value or worth. Of course, they're correct, but reputation is worth something, and it can be worth something very significant. Ethical behavior, therefore, is worth something, and its value can be very significant.
Mm-hmm.
Moral behavior, which underlies ethical behavior, again, is worth something, can be significant. And finally, as you move from the simple repayment of a debt to understanding ethical behavior and its value, and moral behavior and its value, you ultimately come to the question, what is the foundation of moral behavior? And that's where issues of faith come into the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are people there who have no interest in the example I just gave you, and will simply say, I'm worth $3 before I pay you, and $3 after I pay you, and that's it. Those are not the people who tend to gravitate easily and comfortably and with interest with HBU. But there are other people who believe that even though it can be extremely difficult to quantify behavior and its value, it is necessary to do so because one wants to live, one must live lives of value. And for people who believe that to be true, HBU is the place for them. I believe that to be true, and therefore I concluded that HBU is the place for me.
Well, I'll tell you what, Archie Dunham embodies that very principle. And I heard him speak recently at HBU, and he spoke precisely on the spiritual values, mm-hmm. the ethical behavior, the moral behavior that has undergirded and been the source of his conviction in business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's inspirational.
It is, and there's no way to quantify the value of that.
Right.
And speaking as an accountant, it hurts me to say that certain things cannot be quantified.
Right.
But if you wish to run an ethical business, a moral business, and a faith-based business, or if you simply wish to incorporate these values into the way that you live your life, you need to understand what value is, what it means, how it is measured, and when a particular activity or choice that you make either increases or decreases value or worth. That is exactly what accounting is all about. There are people throughout the university here, not just in the accounting department,
right.
not just in the business school,
right.
not just on the faculty, who find these questions fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say the same about other institutions out there. I can say that about this institution, and that's why I am here.
Well, Dr. Creighton, I totally agree with you. The confessional statement of HBU, adopted by every faculty member, the Board of Trustees, is that Jesus Christ is Lord. And that's embraced passionately and yet compassionately. It's a joy for HBU to welcome students from any and all backgrounds. But what's beautiful is that once they enter that background or enter this community, they immediately interact with faculty
mm-hmm.
that are points of light for Christ. And it is truly great. I just want to hit one thing before we wrap. The millennial generation, my wife and I have been studying generations from the silent generation, the greatest generation, to iGen.
Mm-hmm.
But the millennials don't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Their work ethic's different.
Mm-hmm.
And the baby boomers in the next decade are going to transfer $69 trillion of worth.
Mm-hmm.
And so giving in the United States in a recent year, charity giving, was about $300 billion, but it was 50% less than what it was in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously what I'm driving at is that A, We do have a challenge in the millennial generation in creating net worth. Mm-hmm. And net worth is based upon work ethic and being able to handle the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at this greatest generation, even boomers, I happen to be a boomer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, mm-hmm. We were pretty much influenced by this greatest generation to work extremely hard.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of boomers have created net worth.
Mm-hmm.
What is the challenge, in your opinion, before millennials right now as it relates to work and developing net worth?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. First thing I would mention is that whether we're ready for them or not, Gen Z is on our doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
For those individuals who were born in 2000, 2001 and later, they've made their way through the public or private school systems and they are enrolling in college for the first time. And as in addition to trying to manage and teach the millennial generation to be able to do that and answer those same questions about Gen Z, which is a very different generation,
yes,
again, is extremely challenging. Personally, I believe that people are people,
mm-hmm,
and that human nature has not changed at all, and that the way people make decisions has not changed. I believe what has changed is the society, and it continues to change. In particular, when I look at the millennial generation and Gen Z, and I compare it to the generations that came before, Gen X, the baby boomers, and prior to that, the nature of the challenges of living have changed.
Mm-hmm.
The nature of the areas of adversity, the mountains to overcome, those change dramatically from generation to generation. Namely, the world has changed. I am one baby boomer who has never needed to serve in a war. And that makes me distinctly different than baby boomers of my generation who came before me.
Right.
On the other hand, I have lived through 9/11. I have lived through the almost Great Depression of 2009, 2010. For me, those events occurred when I was already an adult, having amassed a reasonable amount of wealth and having been far along in my career.
Yeah.
For other individuals of younger generations, events like those events, very traumatic events that shook our society, were formative events for them. They lived through them when they were much younger. These events shaped their way of thinking about the world, thinking about the risks that confront them, and thinking about the challenge that they face. And as a result, although human nature has not changed, the challenges that prevent people or that stop people from establishing wealth, however one defines wealth,
right,
and creating purposeful, worthy lives where they give to others, that has changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
How does one address that? Well, even in accounting, one tries to address that by not being too slavishly focused on the textbook, on the rules and regulations that one must learn in any profession. That is a key part of any learning process. But knowing how to apply those rules, those regulations, those social and those theological mores to one's own life so that one can create success, that is something that requires reflection, deep contemplation, expression, and discussion. Once again, one cannot engage in that in classrooms that have hundreds of people filled
with
them.
I was just sitting here thinking with that when you said that, what the example you're giving. I mean, how much more important is it? At one point you made, I totally agree with, people are people, regardless of, there's no caste system you're born into.
Mm-hmm.
And the individual mentorship is critical.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can be a millennial, Gen X, or iGen, whatever, and I can create wealth. I can learn how to utilize stewardship, a big biblical principle.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
a financial principle
mm-hmm.
in my life,
mm-hmm.
in every way, emotionally, mentally, physically, maritally, economically. The repercussions are all the same, both good and bad, depending on what kind of steward I am, correct?
Correct. Now let's talk for a moment about one of my interests, which is sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
We began by creating something that we have on campus, which is a faculty learning community on sustainability.
Mm.
No sooner did I create this than I found students who came to me and said, I want in. I am interested in that topic, but it's a faculty learning community. How could we admit students? Well, I immediately reached out to administration, and within the week, we changed it to a joint faculty-student learning community. But that's not where it ended, because administrators within the university came to us and said, I want in. And then we turned it into a campus learning community. And finally, alumni came to us and said, I want in as well. Can't I join you? Well, that was an unusual thing to do, to open a campus learning community to people beyond the campus. But they were members of our family, and so we welcomed them. Why is sustainability so important? Well, whether or not you believe in all of the danger signs and warnings of global warming and climate change, the principle that underlies sustainability is that things that we do to our planet will reverberate over the decades to come. And that if we do something to our planet, to our society, to our economy today, that is profitable today. And that if the damage done by those upfront activities today won't be felt for decades, then traditional valuation metrics say you should do that. You should take the profit today and worry about the damage being done decades from now. Worry about that in the future. Now we come to the table and we say, well, that makes sense. But if we all act that way in whatever we are doing as an endeavor, then we will be saddling our children with tremendous problems, even though we will live well today. Now, when one thinks of sustainability in that way, then people who are very concerned about the federal government's budget deficit say, wait a minute, I've been thinking in those terms. I never defined that as a sustainability issue, but now that you put it in those terms, the federal budget deficit does damage mm-hmm. or impact the sustainability of our society. And so what we wind up doing is defining our interests in such a way that brings as many people to the table and to the conversation as we can. And because, as you mentioned before, we happen to live in a very diverse community, the more people that come to the table, the richer the conversation,
absolutely,
the more we learn from each other.
Yeah, so well said. Dr. Michael Creighton, thank you so much.
It is my pleasure.
So Dr. Michael Creighton is the chair of accounting for HBU and professor of accounting. You can learn more about the business school at hbu.edu/business. Remember, we have people in admissions that are standing by to take your calls, answer your questions at 281-649-3211. Feel free to give them a call. Think about what your future could be, how enhanced it could be through the HBU Archie Dunham School of Business. Check it out. Thank you, Dr. Creighton.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a pleasure.
Good.
Here at HBU, We influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.